Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. My name is Kevin Salinas.
And I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Adze. We are here today with two wonderful guests, and I will let them introduce themselves. We have Dr. Vinny Riccardi and Taylor Balderas here. So, Dr. Vinny, tell us about yourself. Tell us, where were you raised? I mean, like, I know some things about you, like local stuff from, you know, work that we've done together here in the community, but I don't really know who you are, where you come from. So, can you share a little bit
about
yourself?
I'm originally from Spanish Harlem, New York, Upper Manhattan, El Barrio. My life has been kind of a little bit different because I was in foster care. So I was living in Brooklyn in an upper middle income household and then moved back, finding who my parents were in Spanish Harlem. So that was a culture shock in itself. Then also finding who I really was. As a little child, I always thought that, you know, I was your typical, I was living with a Scottish-Irish household. So I thought, I just assumed blue eyes, light hair,
You could pass.
Yes, when I went there, I found out that I was the lightest of my family, the only one with blue eyes, and that, you know, Vicente, you're Puerto Rican and Italian. So it was kind of a shock. But it was a good thing. It helps me doing what I'm doing right now, working within our community, because I can actually relate. Growing up, going to Casa Abuela and having to go, you know, bendición, abuela, ¿cómo está? You know, all that sort of stuff was really a good experience. So I feel very comfortable with the work that I do and with the people that I do come in contact with.
So you were in foster care, and then later you go and you look for your parents?
No, what happened is, I'll make the story very short. Back in the 50s, so I'm disclosing my age, my mother had me quite young. And in those days, being a Catholic household, that just didn't happen. So she was put into the convent. And then I was put in the orphanage, which was next door. So I was living in the orphanage as a newborn baby. And then coincidentally, my mother's mentor was a foster parent. And she was like, no, you know, I'll take him. And I would stay there till I was about 6 years old. On my sixth birthday, I thought it was just a birthday party, but it was my going away party. And that's when I found out who, you know, my biological mom was.
And what does that mean, going away party?
Well, the neighborhood, I lived in the neighborhood, so I called my foster mom, which I now call aunt. I thought she was my mom, and I thought that my uncle was my dad. Needless to say, they weren't. I found out, I was wondering, you know, it's kind of emotional when you have this big party, and they were an affluent family. He was he was a teacher at Brooklyn University, a lawyer, and she was an executive secretary for some private school. But anyway, long story short is, the whole neighborhood came to my birthday party. Now, when you're young, you don't think anything. I'm elated, like, dang, the whole block is coming. Like this, you know, hey, I'm special. And they bought this swimming pool. It was a Huxtable sort of townhouse, so it was a very narrow, small yard. And they bought a swimming pool, and I had the biggest blow-up ball that said Vinny on it. So I'm thinking I'm the man, I guess, in those days. I don't know what words you use, obviously, when you're only 5 years old and turned six. But then what happened is, her mother was from Ireland, so she had that deep Irish, oh my gosh, sort of accent and everything. She was in the living room crying, and I was going like, Grandma Goodwin, why are you crying? And I didn't know what was going on. Obviously, it was all prepped. And she knew I was leaving. And so the party's over and everything. So I run upstairs to my room to see all the gifts, and my bed is stripped, and like, where's all the gifts?
Oh my gosh.
Well, everything was put into the car because I was going to my bio mom.
Oh.
So now I had met my mom, but I never knew she was my mom. Secretly, I got to have visits, not knowing. I thought she was just a friend of my aunt's. There used to be a store called Abraham and Strauss, which is like Big Macy's in Herald Square, but it's in Brooklyn. It doesn't exist anymore. And I remember that she would purposely lose me. And I would sit at the soda fountain, sit there, have a soda or whatever, and all of a sudden this lady, which was my bio mom, would come and get me and play with the toys. And then I would go back. So I thought it was just like, you know, a play date or something. I don't know. But that's how I was meeting my mom. I guess, long story, I found out that really those visits were not supposed to be happening. But I'm blessed. I think everything has a reason for happening. So sixth birthday was traumatic because then I now go Spanish Harlem, tenement, roaches, people that are darker than I am, and I'm like, and I hear a different language, and it's like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
a
an experience.
Big culture shock.
It was. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Now we can use the term trauma. I guess I was traumatized, so to speak. But that actually made me very strong, because then being the oldest, I had to deal with the fact that I had sibs, and they didn't even know I had brothers and sisters. Mm.
Oh,
and
wow.
So now that there was that tension. Here it is, you know, Vinny is now head of the household, so to speak.
And you look like them? Your siblings?
Yeah, we kind of all we favor one another, but we have different fathers. Yeah. So with that, it was something. But then learning the language, because then when you go to Casa Abuela, she speaks only Spanish, and her husband's from Italy, and he only spoke Italian. So talk about really like sort of mentality. Right. So she's talking to him in Spanish, and he's talking back in Italian, which was great because we know that both languages kind of overlap, you know, cocina, cocina, you know, that sort of thing. So I kind of played it off, and that's how I learned the language. Like, okay, hijo, ir a la cocina, you know, so you learn, okay, go to the kitchen, you know, and you just learn it through that. And so that
assimilation
was a good thing. But I didn't use the language. I didn't have any reason to. Now it's all come back, and I didn't realize that I knew as much as I know. But you know when you start conversation and it's like all of a sudden, you know, it just comes out. So, I mean, that's me as a child. Then moving on, living in Harlem, my mother was very much into education, you know, and she was very much like, you know, she was a single parent at the time. Then I took care of my brothers and sisters. She was the super of the building, so she was always out either taking care of the building or whatever, and she was a data processor. So she wasn't around, so I just took the role as being like the dad. And that kind of, you know, taught me how to, I cooked at seven. I used to stand on the, you know, back in the day, well, you're probably too young. Back in the day, we had metal milk crates. If you remember?
I remember.
So I remember I had the metal milk crate in the kitchen.
I know, you're both very young.
Excuse me. I used to stand on the metal milk crate, and I used to make sure I was cooking. So I would make the rice, the eggs, you know, arroz dulce and everything. I just learned how to do all this stuff. Hmm. So I've been cooking forever, and that's my hobby.
Wow.
Food is my hobby, because, you know, when you love somebody, you feed them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anybody who knows me at the Belief Center, you know, there's always snacks or something, because it's just
just
a tradition.
Well, this makes sense to what you do now.
Yeah, it's a tradition. But this is the funny part of the story. Growing up, of course, you know, I went through parochial school, all-boys high school. I paid for my own tuition. I hustled in the streets.
Wow.
I cleaned apartments, toilets, whatever I needed to do.
Oh, okay, not the other way of hustling.
No, no, I never did anything. No, not
gonna, sure.
Well, not gonna, I never did anything illegal, and I won't do that, praise God.
Yeah.
But what had happened is when I moved here, and now coming here, I never planned on staying in Toledo. I only came because my brother married his wife, which came from Toledo. He was living on Long Island. I had my apartment in Queens. I was living in Jackson Heights, Queens at the time. So predominantly I was a principal. With that being said, he invited me to come here for the christening of my nieces. So I came for the christening and then found out, unfortunately, which I'm not going to really get into, but he had a drug problem. So I stayed to kind of help him work that out because they were looking for a house. I'm a licensed broker in New York because I did sell real estate on the side. So I was looking at the houses while they were looking for it. But then finally, I'm like, hold on, there's a problem here. I'm not going to lend you some money and help you, know, drain finances and everything. So I wound up staying. So I sent for my son, Alberto, who was still in Jackson Heights. He came, and my son loved it here. He's like, you know, because everything was cheap.
Is this your only son?
I have a few.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So what happened is Alberto, he came, and he's like, you know, at that time, I think there was a place called Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Alaska, because my apartment was on Tremainsville.
Okay.
So my sister-in-law was the manager. Her daughter, her sister, was one of the workers. My son fell in love with her. So he's like, Dad, this is great. I got a girlfriend. I got a job. I love it here, and everything's cheap. And you're always saying everything's cheap here. The apartment's cheap and everything. I'm like, hijo, like, what are you trying to tell me? Can we stay? And I was like, we'll stay for the rest of the summer. And that was the only goal. Meanwhile, that was in 1987. This is the longest summer experience of my life. with you. But, you know, I truly believe that God has a reason for everything that happens. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm put here for a reason. It's been an experience. But the funniest thing is, at that time, I figured, oh, you know, I need a checking account. I need to move my money here. I sold my, because in New York, I owned the apartment. Mm-hmm. Sold the apartment. And then, you know, my other part of the family moved up down to Miami, and I moved here just with my son. But with that being said, it was a different experience, so I figured get a job. So I went into the paper, and I got a job at the Boys and Girls Club. It was part-time over on Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So the in-laws of my brother like, no, you don't want to work there. That's a bad neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And everything. I'm like, where I come from, it can't get any worse.
Right, right.
You know, like, what bad neighborhood? To me, and they're like, no, you're going close to projects. I said, I didn't even see projects in Toledo. Like, right. Where's the projects? They look at Army barracks. When you look at the Moody Manor and you look at Cherrywood, those look like Army barracks to me. You know, I'm used to the high rise, you know,
right.
A whole exactly, little city yeah. within the city, you know, uh-huh. 16 tenements, a basketball court, a school, the whole nine yards. So it was different. It was a culture shock, but getting that job and then the people that work there are like, you know, wait, you're qualified, highly qualified. Like, why are you even doing this? I said, I just wanted a quick job. So I then applied for the University of Toledo, and I applied for PIC. Well, I got both jobs.
Ah.
So I wound up leaving the Boys and Girls Club. I worked for PIC as a supervisor.
And PIC was the Private Industry Council.
Back for summer employment.
I just always like to say the acronyms.
Yes. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
And so with that being said, that made a connection, and I worked with a lot of kids within the community. And then I was working at UT. I was the one responsible for the drug-free schools and community project. So there was a special grant through the School of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, this is even better. Mm-hmm. My son could go to college for free. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it just worked out well. And then, of course, I'm not going to go on. Yeah, I got into mental health, prevention and what have you, my certifications and what have you. And I worked for the Connecting Point, which was a large mental health agency at the time. We did the runaway shelter.
Yeah.
And then it's like everything just seemed to be, it just mixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it moved on and on and on, and then I became principal of a school. I helped open the first charter school for the state, Aurora Academy. Got, you know, worked on my PhD, got my PhD, then worked on another PhD, got that PhD.
And your PhDs are in?
One is in counseling, the other one's in theology. I am an ordained minister.
Wow, yeah. I didn't know that.
I am an ordained minister. So I could do weddings and all that sort of stuff, which is good. I mean, I do that for family members because then that's you know, cool. It comes from the corazón sort of thing. Yeah. And that's me.
And
that's me.
All right.
And we're going to tap into how that, you know, ties into what you do now. But we would like to know a little bit about you, Taylor.
I don't want to follow that. would have gone first.
You should have gone first. Ladies should have gone first.
You have a great life, Taylor. You've been.
I do. Not that a story like that. So Taylor, from the south end of Toledo, where my parents still reside today, grew up pretty much walking down Broadway, practicing dance at Queen of Apostles, going Adelante, like probably similar stories of what we all, you know, do. But was raised very much to be active in the community. That was a expectation my parents instilled in me at a very young age, is that you show up for your community and you give back. And it's not just something you do. It's a responsibility you take on to do. So fast forward, I ended up getting a full scholarship to BGSU. I was looking at a school in Chicago I really liked, and obviously a 4-year full ride trumps right. You know, what Chicago was going to offer. So I ended up staying in the area, which wasn't necessarily what I intended. And after BG, I came back here and actually started, I was with Adam Martinez at Viva South Toledo CDC, which isn't even around anymore.
No. We have had Adam on the show,
so,
though, as
Adam was my boss. I was his executive assistant. It was just the two of us. So I worked at Flock with Bademar and Christiana and all them. I worked at Adelante with Sonia. and then I kind of took a break from nonprofit community work and ended up being a city councilwoman. So I was on city council for District 3, which is East Side and South End, and campaigned and did all that. Realized that was not the taste I enjoyed. So I took
that's another world.
yes. Even at a city council level, which is not, you know, crazy. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go back to the other end. So stepped back and went back into nonprofit, and actually kind of took a step away from, if you want to say, like the Latino South End community. I ended up being at the Toledo Cultural Arts Center, which is the nonprofit for the Valentine Theater. And then I became executive director of the Maumee Chamber of Commerce, which I absolutely love. The chamber is probably still one of my favorite gigs that I've had. But interestingly, when my daughter Italia was born, I noticed a like personal draw to want like that gap. Mm-hmm. I don't know. She really started showing me, like, the gap. Obviously, my husband and I, culture's all over, but, like, within my work, something she kind of pulled out to me, like, I need to get back that way. So the Sophia Gonzalez Center had asked once before for me to join, and at the time I had declined, but timing lined up about 3 years after being at the chamber. I got a call again and said, well, let's chat. And that was, gosh, 10 years ago now. So.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know about the chamber piece. That's interesting.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that gig.
Yep. All right. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing over at Sophia Quintero?
So at Sophia Quintero, we are pretty much serving, celebrating, we say, and preserving the Latino culture. We do that through sectors. So we do that through art, agriculture, food, mental health, and then I just call community support now with El Centro Hub. So it's a space that has definitely changed dramatically the past 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And we're in we're just in an odd space right now, trying to adapt to and make sure that we're relevant and we're still doing what we need to be doing for the community.
Yeah, because your mission started out in one thing that was more the arts and the cultural piece, and now you've expanded. So maybe in this next section, the next part of this show today, we're going to go deeper into, because we didn't even touch on what you're currently doing, Vinny, and then go deeper into what you're doing and how that mission has kind of changed over time. Be interesting to hear.
Is that what SQACC is, Sophia Quintero?
And Cultural Center, a.k.a. Squawk.
You know, honestly, I've heard a lot about Sophia Quintero. Is she like a local person, or is she like a, I don't know who that, like, is that so, like,
yeah.
I want to know about that. Who is Sophia Quintero?
Go ahead.
I'll jump in too, but Sophia Quintero has passed.
Okay.
So is not a current person, just so you know. But yeah, let's get into that
on our second segment?
Yep, our next segment, because there's a beautiful story behind that.
Okay, yep, so we'll be right back. And we'll dive into Sophia Quintero and what you guys are doing today for the Latino community. Welcome back. This is Kevin Salinas with La Prensa Habla.
And Dr. Linda Alvarado Atze. And we are here still with our two guests, Taylor and Vinny. And now we're going to dive a little bit deeper into what we just ended with, which was learning a little bit more about Sophia Quintero. Kevin had asked, who is she? And then a little bit more about what's happening over there currently over at Squawk.
So Sophia Quintero, and please jump in because I'd learn. As Linda said, she's passed on, but she was the daughter of two migrant farm workers that came this way. And she settled here in the community, and there was no nonprofit at the time. She personally was just very, active.
Yeah.
Education, children, culture were extremely important to her. Mm-hmm. And this was just a personal thing, that she did. And there were a lot, like Lourdes Santiago, Linda, I mean, you can kind of name probably 6 to 8 Latino figures at the time that were doing really good work.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward for time's sake. She went to the University of Toledo, started the Latino Student Union, or was one of the founding members of the Latino Student Union. That's still going on there. Mecha, the dances, kind of all that kind of stuff. And again, still continued work. She was also the first, and I still believe only Latina, to be the president of the Toledo Board of Education.
Oh, wow.
I don't think there's been another Latina last time we checked. And so again, really made some like big, milestones.
What years? What was this? Like what year?
This is probably in like the 80s. I know this because my mother was best friends also with Sophia. And this was when, so Sophia's partner at the time was Arturo Quintero, who is a longstanding, beautiful, beautiful person too, that carried on a lot of the legacy of Sophia after she passed. But he worked for the city for many years under different mayors. Mm-hmm. He's a local attorney that served our Latino community for a long time. And he's still around and still, still participates and still wants to make sure that her legacy is around, because she did have a big part in our educational system. And over at the university and starting different programs and scholarships that were set out for our Latino students to be involved in and to receive. So a very beautiful legacy that she's had.
And I ask that because, you know, there's a new wave of Latinos, right, coming to Toledo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hear Sofia Quintero name being thrown around left and right. And it's like, we need to understand what that is, who she is, right? You know, and what Sofia Quintero's like key focus areas, like as far as the organization, like what do you guys do?
One, I appreciate you saying like sharing her story, because I think for some of us, like, we just inherit it and we know mm-hmm. it. And I will take that back, because you're right. There's this right. whole new Latino community coming in that didn't grow up, mm-hmm. Again, with mm-hmm. the figureheads that we right. know. Right. And again, assuming we know Lord of Santiago, Maria, like all that, like there's so
mm-hmm.
many
stories. He doesn't know any of them.
Yeah, that's my point, mm-hmm. is like really figuring out how to communicate that. So I appreciate you sharing that. So at the center, you know, like I said, we focus on five areas: food, agriculture, art, mental health, and just community support. It's hard to wrap us into like a 60-second description, but overall, we're there to serve and support the community and the Latino culture through those five areas. Mm-hmm. We're not a social service agency. We're founded as an arts and cultural center, but as we discussed in the first segment, we're in this kind of transition of understanding what support looks like mm-hmm. in the present day for our community, because mm-hmm. it looks very different than 25 years ago when we started.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I try to tell my board, 25 years ago when we started, we were one of, I think it was five Latino-based organizations. Now it's Squawk, Nuestra Gente, and Belief Center at to a point of like the cultural context. But I say not the just the residential community change, the nonprofit mm-hmm. community has changed. Right. And I tell the board, we don't have the luxury of being in the same space we were before. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out how can we respond mm-hmm. and stick to the mission that we have.
Right. Right. And you have expanded that. Let's mm-hmm. talk a little bit about the hub, mm-hmm. because that is one expansion that has occurred, which was a very positive expansion and very needed, because as some organizations were falling off mm-hmm. the radar in our community, mm-hmm. Sofia Quintero stepped up to fill some of the gaps. And so did the Belief Center. Mm-hmm. You both together stepped up, because we needed both of you at this critical mm-hmm. time. You, because of the education that you mentioned earlier in the first segment, we needed that. We need that education out there. We need our leaders to be able to show that they have this and that they're willing to share that and be that role model. Mm-hmm. And you as well, mm-hmm. Taylor. So it's been a good partnership. So you want to talk about what that is for people like Kevin that may not know what mm-hmm. this hub concept is, you know?
Oh, so the hub, El Centro, is, I like to say the concept is it's a community liaison, a community support. The hub director is there to understand the needs of the community mm-hmm. in a bicultural, bilingual context, which yeah. is very important to yeah. trust, consistency, you know, sustainability, all that, and understand what their needs are, and then not just connect them to providers, but identify and vet what providers are best. Right. A lot of times our Latino members just like, oh, call so-and-so if you need a roof, or even mental health or something, not realizing, okay, but a cultural, even language, is this really mm-hmm. the best, you know, partner? So the right. hub director works through that to really support. And I say, like, follow through that family. We don't hand off families. We're mm-hmm. walking through this with you. Mm-hmm. The one thing I really try to clarify for the hub is the hub will help with a vast variety of services. The Sofia Quintero Center is not stepping in to provide those services. There are really good organizations and mm-hmm. people already doing mm-hmm. really good work that we don't need to be the leader of everything. Right. We're
so you're
just
not
finding
like stepping
those.
On each other's toes, basically.
No, we're just yep. saying, no. hey, we want to work with you. We mm-hmm. want to understand you, so that when so-and-so needs something in a context of a need, we have options mm-hmm. and yeah. we can figure out how to respond to that.
Yeah. And this was like a brainchild, like kind of like I had this weird idea of, we have all of these services up and down Broadway, like, and, you know, how come we can't all work together? Like, how come we have parents that are still asking, you know, about this or that? Right. Like, can we come up with something? And then took that over to the Toledo Public Schools, and Dr. Durant was like, oh, that's such a great idea. And like, why don't we work off of that? Why don't we do something? I mean, my idea went so far to, why can't we just uncover this tunnel, too, that goes from where Escuela is over to the gardens, mm-hmm. you know? And and let the kids go through, but we couldn't do that. You know, my ideas go real wild sometimes.
I love it.
You know, but I was like, somehow we can all work together. Like, let's all do this. Like, we're the Latino community and we shouldn't have barriers. We shouldn't be in silos. So let's do this. And it was the idea of let's bring up a staff person to do this. And started out, Toledo Public Schools was cool, let's do this. We have hubs in other areas, and now it's split off from there, and now you have found additional funding to mm-hmm. continue to do this, and you can give them a plug and talk about that.
Yeah, thanks to the Stranahan Supporting Organization, as well as now the Eldred Foundation, both mm-hmm. Truly believe in the hub work. Funny, the Stranahan Supporting focuses on housing, but really saw if you don't have a support system like the hub, mm-hmm. none of these services, whether it's housing or food, nothing will work. And said, we want you in our projects to make this successful. So thanks to those two partners, mm-hmm. the hub, at least for, you know, we got a little breather. We're not fully yeah. self-sustaining, but, you know, we got a minute now to figure mm-hmm. some stuff out.
And it ties in with a lot of what the Believe Center is, because mm-hmm. this was supposed to be almost a partnership together with the Believe Center. So you want to...
Yeah, actually, you know, Taylor and I were very fortunate that the Mental Health Board approached us, because obviously we know that there was a gap.
The Lucas County Mental Health
Lucas
and
County
Recovery Services Board.
I stand corrected.
I learned something from her today, yeah. Always.
And the funny thing is I generally rattle off like that, but I was speaking quickly. So with them being involved, they approached us. And I think it really came from the Latino community. You know, we had those meetings
yeah.
that were hosted at Squawk. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there was a lot of people are not aware that a lot of the Hispanic Latino community, there's a lot of people who have good hearts and they're willing to speak, but obviously because of some cultural barriers, so to speak, whether it's yeah. language or not, it's like, you know, I'll be quiet, let someone speak for me.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, the community came together mm-hmm. and kind of like, you know, we need what we need, what we need, what mm-hmm. we need. And we were blessed to be a part of that. Yeah. So with that is...
And
because remember, the Adelante had existed and was then... gone for quite some time.
Right, and that was an amazing thing. That's what I was going to say, because when Adelante was functioning, Adelante was only getting like 60, 70,000 for the year. It was a small amount. Mm. And when everybody went to these community meetings and started going to the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board and saying, hey, we need more, we need these services, we need that, the dollar amount, it yeah. almost like tripled, quadrupled. It really did. And it's advocacy and it's people coming together and making yeah. that happen.
And see, and that's the biggest thing. So then speaking of the Believe Center, but I'm going to go back in time because it's probably about 3 years.
Yeah,
maybe when we approached,
kind of third grade.
And I have to compliment Taylor, because Taylor was like, you know, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this, because it's kind of, you know, yeah. realistically, both of our agencies had to kind of like tweak our mission, so yep. to speak. We'll never veer off of the mission, but the reality is we have to be a little more organic yep. in the way that we do mm-hmm. things. And so it was a learning curve. Fortunately, I mean, I've been in mental health, so mm-hmm. I kind of had that in the credential and what have you. So it's kind of, okay, we could do this. So how about you have this part, I have that part, and we work together. So we, mm-hmm. at the Believe Center, originally the Believe Center really was just a sports sort of programming.
Right, right.
But historically, and I'm not going to go into the history, because remember, we're housing the Aurora Gonzalez Center.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep,
and she
that.
In turn was a very strong person within the community. Yes. I can't speak of the yes. story per se, because I was a newbie.
Absolutely.
Oh, but I remember her fondly. I remember going on bus trips to, you know, March for Justice, Immigrants' Rights. And this is back in the day with Aurora and her sisters.
Right, the
you
sisters,
know,
right.
Yeah, because she comes from a big family. But, yep, the center is named after that. Even the street.
Even the drive. Even the street yep, is yep, called yep. the Aurora Gonzalez Drive. Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe every 10 to 20 years, as a society, Latino community, like there's different needs, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's different, I guess, just evolution, I guess. I'm not sure. But, you know, there's different needs, and maybe the needs in the 80s were different than the needs in the 2000s, different than the needs that there are now, mm-hmm. right? As a Latino community. So how does your organizations like realize or understand what the Latino community needs today? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I can speak of that as far as, like I said, the Believe Center originally was really a sports sort uh-huh. of programming, mm-hmm. right. and then it kind of evolved. I came on board, and then with my background is like, okay, we need more education, mental health, because you were seeing the needs, and a health, you could play sports, and I believe, you know, mind, spirit, et cetera, mm-hmm. is necessary to be holistically self-improving. And so we put that component on, and then when the Mental Health Board came and said, uh-huh. look at this, then now we have a navigator. So the navigator's responsibility is, because she is bilingual, and that was the biggest barrier. Language was a very big barrier.
Yeah. And your navigator is who?
Nalix Otero.
Yep.
And Nalix Otero used to work for she used to work for Adelante back in the day. Yep. So I've been blessed. I mean, gracias Dios. I'm super blessed, because the fact is, here it is, was taking on a task, and here it is, I was getting what we could call an OG, that she was experienced doing case management. Mm-hmm. She also translates, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to give a quick story. I met Alex only because I'm a foster parent, and I had gotten a placement from he's from Guatemala, and he could not speak a word of English. Now, I kind of told CSB, like, look, I don't want another placement. You know, there's a lot going on with the bleed. My plate's really full. I can only spin, you know, 17 plates at the same time. I can't take that 18th one, all joking aside. So with that, the agency said, well, but Vinny, you're the only foster parent we have that can speak Spanish, and this boy cannot say anything in English. So when he came to me, he was just like looking at me, and it's like, hijo, tú no sabes, but... Oh, yeah, you know, and a lot of Google Translate on his phone and share. Well, Nalix was the translator that was hired by CSB when we had the treatment team meeting, because I was not allowed to translate because of conflict of interest situation. So we became friends. So we did all our treatment teams meeting. Let's just do it at my house. You know, all of a sudden you got a big house. So we did that. And I wanted to make sure that he felt comfortable, because, you know, it's a story which I'm not going to share at this particular point in time, because I don't think it's necessary. But part of his background was kind of, unfortunately, a lot of our underdocumented could go through some experiences that can be very horrific. So he was placed with me. And once again, giving thanks to God, is he came to me. I really chose not to have him, but then chose to have him because I was bilingual. With that being said, but through the transition, Nalix Otero, I befriended her a lot more and found out her experience. I was like, oh, my God, like, you're the one that I need. So I was like, here. I'm offering you a job. Take it. And she jumped on board. And so, you know, it worked that way. But the other thing is that I need to share with you is me learning more with the underdocumented or undocumented population, it was a learning experience for me, because now I had to go through, wait, he doesn't have health care. I got to go through CareNet. He doesn't have this. I need to connect him. Wait, he doesn't have this. You know, I have to make sure that I get his card, and I have to make sure that, you know, he doesn't have a social security number. How do you go through? And so that whole process for me was a learning experience. Now, Lalix already know, because she held him by the hand, but I was able to actually live it. And I think that's the best thing that helps us, because we can share some living experiences. So that's really a good thing.
And I really like that you said that, because I think there's a big difference, and maybe this is where I think a little bit differently, is because there's a difference between what documented Latinos need versus what undocumented Latinos need, right? And I'm a big voucher, obviously, for undocumented. I was undocumented, right? So it's like people need to understand what you need at that point in time when you're in that place,
in your capacity,
and back to a little bit of about what you were saying. You know, there's a lot of leaders that are stepping up, and there's a lot more people that don't speak up because, whether it's that fear of being undocumented or because they can't communicate it because they can't speak the language. You know, so it's important that organizations like understand those, that there's two different type of people, right? For one, but two, also understand what each group needs, and also that you're, you know, adapting and really helping, guiding those people to really understand their vision for, you know, coming to the United States.
Right. What I will say, though, and because you've mentioned this a couple times, Kevin, I've heard you, is that the way that these organizations figure out what the need is of the people is through surveys, through community surveys, through going out into the families, into their homes, recording, you know, almost qualitatively, you know, what's happening. But if people don't come out, if they don't do the surveys, if they don't answer their doors, it's hard to capture what people may need. I mean, they can only do as much as they can do based on what they can get. So if people are out there asking, please, you know, give us some feedback or do the, you know, it really helps us to be able to provide those needs and fill those gaps in the community.
And I think for us to stress to those people, because we hear it all the time, I'm just one dia. Like, what you have to say matters. Yes. I want to sit, whether it's 15 minutes, I will sit here and listen to you. It matters. And I think it's not just fear, it's just assumption. my one voice No, you'd be surprised what your one voice can completely alter in this.
I need to share is, and one of the nice things about our community is, you alluded to silos and stuff like that, and and I feel a lot of those silos have been destroyed, because, you know, me being the president of Latino Alliance of Northwest Ohio, fortunately we have that community. Actually, I have a meeting this evening. But with that being said, is different organizations and different Hispanics and Latinos, we come together and talk about either our agency or what the problem is. So the mission, obviously, is to make sure that we serve that population. But on the other hand, is the Belief Center has the round table.
That's what I was going to say. You have a community round table.
Yeah, we have a community round table. And that has grown tremendously. And then I have to give kudos to Nalix, because, you know, my philosophy is, if you think it can happen, I'm going to support you and go. Because if your passion is... The reality is, if you're happy at your job and happy what you're doing and you're seeing success, and we're seeing families, because families are coming out now, because remember before they weren't.
Right.
Now, granted, unfortunately, because of the climate we're in, there's a lot of people who have that fear factor that they're not going to be very vocal. But we have another organization, APPS, which is kind of working with kind of an underground sort of population in that. So, I mean, so I feel me being here, I'm witnessing a lot of transformation is going on with the Hispanic community.
Absolutely.
I mean, we both see it within, because you have the hub, El Centro. We have kind of the same thing. So I mean, we're moving. It's moving.
So we're gonna wrap this up. But you know, I really like this conversation. I want us to continue talking about organizations and I even have some ideas that I'd like to discuss with you guys. So we'll be back after this break.
Welcome back. We had such a wonderful time talking about the organizations and what's happening. Kevin has some questions that he was starting to get into on our break, so we want to get back into that. We're not going to have any food during this segment because we normally do, but we are just having such a great conversation. We want to continue that. So, Kevin, go for it. Ask the questions you were trying to ask during the break.
Well, I guess one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, how can we bring the Latino community out a little bit more so that they're, you know, filling out these surveys and everything. And I think having some type of event where we possibly bring out consulado, right? Bring out different consulados from Mexico, Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, you know, and you tell people, hey, this consulados really bring out the Hispanic community because everybody wants to get a passport. Everybody wants to get an identification that, you know, the police or whoever will actually say, hey, this is a good identification.
A valid identification.
And that's such a great idea because being here in the community for such a long time, we always bring the Mexican consulate. We do. And we have a great relationship with them. You know, they're right there in Detroit. I don't know if we've ever tried to reach out because the other consulates, some of them are in Cleveland, some of them are in Chicago, in different places. Where's the Honduran consulate at?
In Chicago.
Yep. See, I think that's why some of it, I mean, we've always tried to go like right over the line into Detroit, which is closer. But the consulate not only has that, they have great resources in books. So like Escuela, we've reached out to them to supplement our curriculum, and they can give you books from pre-K all the way through high school that are bilingual, and their workbooks that families can do and use at home. So the consulates have a lot of different resources. And so I think that's a great idea because I don't know if we've ever thought to do that. Yeah. And like Kevin, you're mentioning, we have had a huge influx of a lot of different Latino immigrant groups that have, you know, decided to stay in Toledo for reasons like Vinny was saying. It's cheap. You know, it's nice to stay here. Yeah. And once you're here, you begin to really like it because it's a very close-knit community, Toledo is.
And, you know, another one really quick here, the Belief Center does is ESL. And I actually, and my mom actually goes to ESL in Toledo. I'm not sure if that's the one she goes to. But, you know, I've got a couple of guys that also go to ESL. And, you know, like I always tell my...
ESL, English as a second language.
Yep, English is a second language. And I always tell like my... You know, people who work with me that don't necessarily speak English, I'm always like, you have to learn the language. At the end of the day, you have to at least be able to say, hey, you know, this is what I was doing or this is who I am. Because that's part, I think one of the two biggest fears is that communication and two, identification. And even if you're like, okay, you know, we can't bring a consulado, you know, to Toledo, you know, there's maybe not enough Hondurans or whatever the case. finding out a way to maybe partner with even like the local police department and saying, hey, what identification, who can we partner with where there's an organization that talks to the police department, that talks to, you know, say someone who can make identifications and say, how can we make you guys help you guys accept these IDs? Yep. Right?
So we have some of that going on. I'm gonna let Vinny talk about it because I know, and I'm not gonna take over the whole
and
show.
I'm really glad you asked that.
We just had a press conference.
Exactly. And you know, so we have Flock historically. That's always, you know, been. Yep. You know, there's the red cards that can be distributed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, are you familiar with the red cards?
Yes. Yeah,
basically my rights, et cetera, et cetera. And then we just had APPS, which I apologize, I cannot remember what the acronym stands for. I really am so sorry. I call it APPS all the time, but it really translates to opening doors to success.
Can you elaborate on APPS a little bit? What is APPS?
So APPS actually, a group of us had gotten together that work with different community groups, and we felt the need, like, wait a minute. We really need to really dive deep with what is, you know, what is ICE doing, what's going on, what are the rules, the regulations, what is the communication with the sheriff office, with the police department, with the mayor's office, city council, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been doing a lot of that work. So there was a letter that was drafted, and actually one of the persons that would be here.
Right.
Is
Jessica.
Jessica is the one.
Jessica actually.
So she spearheaded that portion, and she spoke at the press conference. So we've been doing stuff behind the scenes. With that being said, is there is like a protocol put in place. And it will take quite a number of minutes for me to say, so I'm not going to go there. But there is a protocol put in place that would help identify, you know, I can take out my card. I can use my phone. Okay, perfect example. Yep. Remember I alluded to earlier that I've been blessed with the fact that I have my Guatemalan. And so with that, is he has his Flock card. He carries the red card, like I refuse to speak, etc.
And the Flock card that he's referring to is a identification card that is good in the city of Toledo, maybe Lucas County now only.
His agreement.
It doesn't go further outside of that, so just know. But you can go to the Farm Labor Organizing Committee that Baldemar has and oversees. He's the president of right there on Broadway, right next door to Sofia Quintero. And you can go in there and you can get an identification card that says that you can drive. That's your ID. You get pulled over. You can show that as a document that the police and the sheriffs, they will recognize.
They're recognized as a valid.
As a valid ID. But you go there, it's a minimal cost to get it. But you go there and you get that card, and that's what Vinny's referring to, the Flock card, when you have that.
Right.
So there is something put in place. I think one of the biggest issues, of course, is making sure that those people who are leery or afraid are aware that there is something to help you.
Right.
And there are steps. And fortunately, you know, Nalix is very, very smart. She's driven to Chicago. She's driven to Detroit. She drives to Cleveland all the time with some of the people that we do work with, because we have a large population that we're working with. And then, of course, then we get referral. We share. But Nalix, actually, that's her role. She's taking that on. She knows what she's doing. And the other thing is, you know, within our community, let's be realistic, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and who you feel comfortable. Because remember, it's, you know, it's trust.
Yep.
Yep.
And it's the language. Mm-hmm. And it's also, more importantly, is, and I'm glad that it's beginning to happen, where people are becoming a little more culturally sensitive and empathetic. Mm-hmm. Because we could use the lingo saying, oh, I might be bilingual and I could speak the language. But if you don't know the culture, you know, then, you know, it could be you could be doing something disrespectful. And I can share, I know I went to an Indian reservation way back when.
Indian, like Hindu Indian?
No,
or
American,
Native American.
Native American. Oh, okay. And I went in and I went, you know, to say like hi and everything, not realizing that that was disrespectful. My head should have been bowed when I went to the chief. You know, just little nuances like that. You know, we need to be aware of those. You know, and then another thing that was a culture shock for me, because one of the schools that I was the principal of had a large Arabic population. And then, you know, I'm a hugger. You know, Latinos, we hug. Betiso, como está, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you know, we do a lot of hugging. But I didn't realize, like, I wasn't cognizant of the fact that when you know, you're not supposed to touch a female within the Muslim community. And so I went like this, she went like this, and I kind of like, oh my God, like, is it that you don't like me? then I had to realize afterwards, like, oh, I apologize, you know, no disrespect or anything. And she goes, no, you didn't know, but within our community. And so we have to be aware of, you know, that was a learning thing for me. Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm working with the population that was, you know, a lot of Muslim and Arabic-speaking people. So there's just things like that. But fortunately, we, we're part of that population, so right. we are aware of some of those little nuances, which is very, very important.
Yep. And aware too, Knights, she's also a certified translator, correct?
Right. So yeah, she's
so
certified
to just anybody can go out and translate for people. Mm-hmm. It's you have to be certified. I mean legal jargon, legal terminology. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to be certified to be able to do that. Medical terminology. I mean, you could tell somebody something, paraphrase it, kinda, but that could actually influence their whole life.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really important to make sure that people are certified to do that. These aren't people that are just, we decided Vinny really liked her, you know, and this. No, these are people that are qualified to do this kind of work. So everything that's being done in all the organizations that they're talking about, it's all looking at how do we build this infrastructure? How mm-hmm. do we fix this? And how do we do this from the root, not just for show, but right. actually get down and really help people.
And then add on to that. Oh, I'm sorry. Then to add on to it would be also making sure that these particular individuals, because you have some, that they are going to be appropriately licensed and trained. Right. Mm-hmm. So then, therefore, when you go into some of these rooms, mm-hmm. you can easily say, like we can say, oh, doctor, you know, doctor, mm-hmm. doctor, because you're one too, mm-hmm. that I'm not saying that, oh, you need to respect me because I have those qualifications. But the fact is, if I do mm-hmm. say something and I'm putting my licensure or, right. you know, on the line, mm-hmm. is because I'm not going to take that risk mm-hmm. to say something that I know isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And then your staff too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, to your initial point, though, it's good for us to hear about there is all this good work and services, the ID, for example, like how do we get that out mm-hmm. better?
Right.
Because the Latino community, you know, there's a South, there's an East side. There, I mean, mm-hmm. there's still areas. And again, even for us who have been in the community, though, if you're new to that area, there's still not a trust built regardless. Mm-hmm. You know, and I respect and understand people are fearful, you know, and want to make sure they're doing right. But again, it's you providing input to us of like, okay, how do we do that in a strategic manner mm-hmm. to make sure it's getting past, I like to say, our bubble of the South End and getting even, you know, farther out.
You know, I think another even big thing is like for Latinos, there's a big lack of education of, you mentioned it just a little bit ago, Vinny, with even having like this, like just the proper manners to you know, and I say this to like my team all the time, like, you know, hey, like saying good morning, saying, mm-hmm. you know, things that may not seem like they don't matter, smiling, right, if you're out in public, like, but they do, you know, and the thing is, the reality of it is a lot of the people, a lot of the Latinos really can't read or write. So you can't read or write, you can't understand.
You're speaking more Latinos that are first generation Latinos mm-hmm. that are just coming over because
yes.
our Latinos right now, we've made great strides educationally as mm-hmm. in as undergrad. We've been working really hard on this pipeline, on undergrad and actually getting them to graduate from high school. And even into grad school, Latinas are one of the highest even over males to mm-hmm. even get grad degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So we've made some huge strides and we've been working hard on that. But first generation, yeah, mm-hmm. because they leave their countries mm-hmm. and they haven't completed
yeah,
their education.
Yeah, they have to work.
You know, and I just see that there's definitely a big need in that, you know, as simple as it seems, you know, there's a lot of people that come and they're just looking for a better life, but they don't understand and just guiding mm-hmm. them, right? Like just guiding, like, okay, where do you see yourself? What are you trying to do? You know, what are your accomplishments? Mm-hmm. And a lot of those goals obviously go back to, hey, I just want to build my house in my country or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm happy, mm-hmm. right? Or whatever, you know, so that's one thing I feel like, at least I do with my team is I try to align their vision with what they need to do and who they need to become so that vision comes to life sooner. And even like on with Flock, for example, in the identification that Flock does, mm-hmm. do you know if the banks accept that?
Yes, and
yes.
actually the
yep.
Esperanza.
Yep, Nueva Esperanza, who we've also had Sue on the show as well. Mm-hmm. She yep. came on with Adam. Yep, she went and talked about that. That's the whole purpose we've created. Well, the whole community, our Latino community here in Northwest Ohio, has created a like little microcosm of a system and support for our Latinos. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the school, Escuela, to help educate. And even there, we have parenting classes and ESL for our parents there. They can go over to Sofia Quintero, learn some arts, learn some mental health pieces.
And we have ESL.
Yeah, and they have, right.
And tutoring.
Right, and we have food pantry, we have Flock. I mean, we have a lot. We have the library right down the street. We have Compassion, the clinic that also has bilingual medical. You know, we've created a little, like, nice little, that's why the hub thing was just so important, was because I don't think that we were able to tie it all together and that tied it together. But we have compared to other cities and other towns, we have a great support system. When I go to other places, like I was over in Defiance this morning, Defiance, all their Latino stuff has pretty much just gone away. Mm-hmm. They don't have any. A lot of these towns, it's gone. All the work that our parents, that our elders before us, you know, paved for us, a lot of it has just vanished. It's just not there. Toledo, we've been able to stay strong with that, but we've had a lot of people. And right now, it's now trying to give to this next generation, to the Jessicas, to the Taylors, to the next younger generation to carry that forward too, because if not, we'll lose that. And that's why it was so important, the school, to keep that culture, to keep that language, to understand, you know, that there are differences that our Latino community has and that, you know, we need people to be able to respond to.
And can I piggyback on that? Is real quick. And one of the things that, you know, looking at our community is also Lid Ramos. Mm-hmm. And so Lid Ramos is actually a training program that talks about culture. And I can't remember if it's 8 or 6 weeks. I lost track because it's kind of been tweaked. But long story short is we have that program where it's taking younger Latinos within the community that want to be able to learn some skills, leadership skills, but more importantly, learn more about your own culture and then how that relates to who you are, what you are, and how you relate to others, and how do you speak? Uh-huh. How do you speak to organizations and stuff like that? And that just started last week. We're in our second cohort. Yep. So, we plan on going on, and we're getting funding.
And they bring other leaders in to talk and share. So it's a way of strengthening what's going on in our Latino community at the same time building upon the mentors and the mentees that are there.
So you know, it seems like the as far as the mission, the goals, they're getting, you know, they're being accomplished as far as what organizations need to do. Because I didn't know about the flock, but it's about, you know, delivering that message. And you know, before we wrap up, I would like to ask, with us, you know, stepping into spring and summer and whatnot, what organizations or events are up and coming that we can tell people right now so that they could maybe sign up to go and whether it's volunteering or just visiting a community event.
I was going to let you go first. I talk too much.
Let's see. So El Centro Hub in April will be having the second annual health fair. It started last year focusing on Latinas, mammograms, diabetes testing. I really acknowledge or commend our hub director. The vendors that come in, she tells them, like, you have to bring something that can be actively tested. You can't just come pass out pamphlets.
Right.
You got to do something. Mm-hmm. So now it's being open to Latinos, Latinas. So that will be in April coming out. We have a series of cooking classes celebrating, gosh, I think it's Ecuadorian, Puerto Rican, Honduran food, pretty much going from now until May at the Sofia Quintero Center. So that's something coming up as well. And one thing to kind of push more for needs is we will be starting our produce. We distribute about 5,000 pounds of produce free to the community.
Oh, wow.
And so this year our goal is 6,000 pounds. But for anyone in need of food and produce, please come to us. We will be starting and opening our garden soon and are happy to help. Lots going on. Go to our website. I don't want to take all the time.
And believe it or not, that's what I was going to say. It's the best thing. We have
go
a
to
lot.
Our website.
You know, we have a car show coming up soon. Mm-hmm. We have fundraiser. We have Thank You for Believing. We actually, the Corazón de Mexico is going to be 30 years old this year.
Which is the folkloric dance.
Folkloric dance. They're going, instead of doing it at the Belief Center as we normally do, we're going to have it at the Orthodox Church.
Oh, okay.
To make it a little more.
That.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just a lot of stuff. Best thing is just go to it. I mean, we're starting all our sports. We do all sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You name the sports and we pretty much have it. Mm-hmm. The philosophy is if a child asks about it and there's families that want the investment, then we'll make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I actually started a program in one of the Toledo public schools because mm-hmm. kids were asking for it. So the Belief Center now is in Whittier School. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's our team, even though it's a school team. Mm-hmm. And that's once again showing that the silos have been broken down, you know, yep. TPS versus mm-hmm. the community and stuff. Mm-hmm. So go to the website, Belief Center.
So yep. go to the Belief Center website, and you know, we do have to wrap up this this episode. And I think one of the last things I want to mention, Linda, is that we could do is maybe partner with them through La Prensa and okay. just make sure that it's out there for people yep. to know.
We do all the time. We always have them on.
I don't read La Prensa. Hey,
and you're a board member.
All right, guys, thank you very much for listening in, and we'll see you next week.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.